Saw a story online today and wanted to chat about it on the afternoon show, so we invited Tess Nicol on. She was the author of the story. Now, photo exhibitions can be pretty wonderful places, but lots of adults these days exist on a visual diet of smartphones and Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook and memes. And so Tess was interested in the question whether the digital world has dulled that primal joy of seeing beautiful photographs in person. Tess Nicol is Metro Magazine's digital editor, and she's written a really lovely essay exploring that very question. She joins me now. Hi, Tess.
Hi, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
Well done.
Thanks.
Tell me your state of mind before going to see the World Press photo exhibition.
I was mainly really curious to see how I would react to it. So I was feeling really curious and sort of with like a hint of trepidation, because I was like, what if I see these photos and I don't feel anything? Like, what will that kind of say about me? Because I remember in the past, like as a much younger person before the internet, I was always really affected when I would go and look at these photos. And I was like, oh God, what if, like, you know, my heart's become too hard or something?
Yeah, and can you explain that to people? Because some people won't know what you mean by that or why you would be worried about that.
Yeah, so the context that I'm putting that in is that, you know, particularly since becoming a journalist, so in the last sort of 4 years or so, I spend a lot of time, you know, online and on social media reading the news and looking at pictures that are in the news. And a lot of the news from around the world is really awful and really sad and quite complicated politically and distressing, and it's really hard to know, what do I think about this? What should be done? If I know what should be done, what could I possibly do to affect this? And so because it's so overwhelming, because it's so constant, you know, like the internet has no limits. There's no, it's not like a newspaper which you can finish reading. It's like limitless.
Yeah.
And so you can get so overwhelmed that you kind of almost start shutting off. You know, you shut off your empathy and you shut off to avoid feeling totally upset and overwhelmed by the news all the time.
An example which you cite in your essay is that photo of the mother and child being detained on the border going into the US, right? So that is no longer a photo that you see and study. It is a photo that represents a whole lot of other stuff.
That's right. So for me, like if that pops up, say I'm on my phone and I'm scrolling through Twitter and that photo pops up, it's shorthand for what's happening with the Trump administration and what's happening at the border. And while intellectually I know that that's an awful situation, I can't afford to, well, not afford is the wrong word, but, you know, I don't want to totally immerse myself in the emotions that that could kind of create in me, because I don't want to feel sad all the time if I was just quickly scrolling my phone. And so you start to sort of shut yourself off in that way, and that concerns me, you know?
Yeah, there might have been a time when you would see a photo in the World Press photo exhibition once in a newspaper during the year, or
that's right. And I remember when the newspaper was the only, because my parents would get the paper every day, and that would be the only place, you know, or maybe watching the evening news, that you would see that photo. And I just remember feeling so moved by these awful photos, and it's just like, it's like it's harder and harder for those kinds of images to really move me.
Yeah, like for example, how many times do you think you would have seen that photo of the mother and child at the border?
Oh, dozens and dozens of times.
Maybe 100 you know. Times, right? If you're on Twitter or wherever, yeah.
Totally. But what was sort of comforting about going to the press, like the exhibition, was that I realised that it's so contextual. Because when I sort of, okay, went and I wrote in my piece that I had to shut my phone off because the temptation to check it is so strong and habitual now. You know, I turned my phone off. I, like, really focused on being kind of present and, like, thinking about what it was I was looking at. And being in that context and seeing the picture so big, you know, and being able to make out so much of the detail, and being, you know, having intention, being there to see the photo and not just like scrolling my phone and like it pops up. I was there to like engage with those ideas. Like all of my feelings about it came flooding back, you know, like I felt so actually overwhelmed by it that I got quite teary-eyed. And that was, in a way, a relief to know that, oh, I'm not becoming apathetic and my heart's not becoming hard. And I, you know, I kind of thought this must be something that other people worry about and think about as well.
Yeah, and you've captured that in your essay, which people can read on a link on our website. Part of the difference for you...
metromag.co.nz.
Yeah, sorry. So we've linked it to it on ours if it's easier. But no, we haven't actually. So yeah, metromag.co.nz, but we'll put a link up shortly for people.
Fantastic.
And part of the difference was that you walked through the exhibition with your full attention, right?
That's right, yeah.
So, and how does that change the experience of looking at these photos?
I think that it's probably quite a common, like I'm sure that, you know, the listeners now, well, maybe some of them don't know what I'm talking about, but I would say a lot of them would know that kind of half attention. I feel like I'm always giving people and situations maybe half my attention or three quarters of my attention, but a little part of my brain is thinking about, oh, I just felt my phone vibrate. I wonder who's messaging me. Is somebody calling me? I wonder if I've got an email. You know, and you're kind of not fully present and kind of putting my phone on flight mode. I try and do it if I go to a gallery or something like that. And it's almost like you're chopping this kind of line to the outside world and you're allowing yourself to just be really present in the moment and just totally put your attention, all of it, onto the thing in front of you, which I hardly ever make the effort to do that. And it's always so rewarding when I do. And I think I've got to do this more often, you know, read a book with my phone in another room or turn my phone off when I get home after work. And you so rarely do it.
Yeah. And instead of sending a Twitter update, instead of tweeting, I'm at the World Press Photo Exhibition, yeah, wow, so moving, you instead took a day or two, presumably, to process it. And then you put your thoughts down in a much longer form. I think that must be pretty rewarding too.
Yeah, that's right. And it is really rewarding as well, because I wrote about in the piece, like, this feeling sometimes that we have to react to everything really immediately. And I was talking about, like, kind of coming up with, like, your take on a political situation. But I think as well, like, sharing your emotional reaction to something, sometimes you get into the habit of, like, sending that off into a tweet or into an Instagram story or something like that. And, like, actually just making myself sort of sit with it. What do they really think about that? How do they really feel about that? And try and, like, make a story out of it. It was really rewarding to feel like I didn't just sort of biff it out into the world and then there it was and then I forgot about it, you know?
Part of this is the amount of content that is available to your eyes and ears at any one time, right? Like, if you're sitting, I presume you're sitting at the Bauer offices at the moment with the web page open, you've probably got, what, 15 tabs open at the moment, Tess?
That would be a very conservative estimate.
Yeah, including Twitter. I don't know if you're on Instagram. You know, so at any one time, you have probably 20 things that you could be looking at. If one gets boring for an instant, you'll go to another one, right? That's just...
You switch over, totally.
Being, I say, our age loosely in 2019. And so part of it was going to this exhibition and only having the thing in front of you available for your attention, and presumably that kicks your brain and your heart into a different sort of speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting as well, like your use of the word content. Like, I notice myself doing that now. Everything is just content, which kind of flattens it into this like endless like content. But it's like these are beautiful pieces of like art, you know, and to kind of put them in their proper context and like take the time to really appreciate them. Like, you know, maybe this sounds pretentious, but I do think that the limitlessness of what we can look at online just means that we're spread so thin and how much we really consider and take it in.
From your essay, you say, inside the exhibition room, phone disabled, the amount of content available to me shrank, and in tandem, my capacity to properly absorb what I was looking at expanded. It's a lovely way of putting it, and we'll put a link on our website. That's coming up, so find it for now at metromag.co.nz. Tess Nicol, thanks. Nice to chat to you as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
That's Metro Magazine's digital editor and her thoughts on attending the World Press photo exhibition.